connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for web.
Computer today.
Computer.
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 NetSurfer Pro.
Ah, come to play at my table today, Mr. Bond.
I simply fancy myself a game of cards, you see. Now waiter, deal me in. That's what you're called, right? Waiters?
Yes, dealer, please get me a martini.
Yes, give me a martini. Shake it really fast like you're trying to make a soda can explode.
And for mine, I want you to put it in two plastic bottles and stir it really fast so it makes a tornado.
Yes. And then you can flip it upside down, and it still looks like a tornado. Very good, very good.
All
yes.
Right, now please deal us in, waiter. Yes. Well, I see my hands. All right, I think I know what I'm going to do. So, Mr. Bond, what is your opening play? Are you going to discard three cards, maybe discard one card?
I'm going to discard five cards,
then draw
five cards.
A masterful play, I see. I'm clearly not dealing with a beginner here, Mr. Bond.
I'm over here, by the way. I'm just going to go ahead and ante in, and you know what? I'll discard a card. Don't mind me.
Oh,
you've
yes,
got sort of a whole thing going on, I can see.
All yes, right. Yes, of course.
Your turn.
This is a very serious discussion. I appreciate you just going to the far corner, of course. Anyway, I believe I will discard four cards here, and I will draw four more. All right, I'm ready to play my hand. We don't do any betting or anything in this casino, of course.
Of course.
Of course.
This is an exclusive casino club.
All right. Well, Mr. Bond, I'm super sorry to say I happen to have a full house of aces and threes, all of which are diamonds.
Well, unfortunately for you, I seem to have the upper hand in this hand. I have seven Uncle Jessies.
Oh.
And three pictures of an aunt.
Oh, man.
I'm not an aunt like the familial ties, of course. These are bullet ants.
Ah, yes, the zoo animals collection. A classic move, some might say outdated.
Yes.
Well, of course, I did not play my trap card, and your Uncle Jesse's have actually just activated the secret that I did in the previous turn. Thus, I do two damage to everything on the board.
Ah, yes, you see, but I have heroic intervention. Cast at instant speed, gives all my creatures indestructible. And hexproof.
Oh, interesting. Well, unfortunately for you, I happen to have a Raigeki in hand.
Raigeki is a quick spell. You can't play that from your hand, you have to set it first. Waiter, this man is cheating.
By the way, I just have Mirror Force, and then I had like three twos.
Wait, he had Mirror Force and three twos? Ah, damn it, he wins this hand.
Ah, well played, mysterious stranger.
You know, You seem like a nice guy. Would you happen to have any openings for a spy movie or some kind? I've been looking for an actor, actually.
Oh, I don't act. I've actually been building a giant ray in my lab. I just came down to play a few hands of poker.
Okay, of course. Well, ta-ta then, Mr. Bond, and myself, and the waiter, and also the server.
Hold on, we need that server for communications.
Is this bit anything?
This is nothing. this is what happens every time is we don't know how to end the bit, so we're kind of stuck in limbo.
Oh man, we really do have the sitcom problem, much like the Uncle Jesse cards, of knowing how to start something but having no idea how it ends.
Yeah, we're really like this like Love Town train of just like we are stuck in a time loop of bad bits. So,
speaking of a time loop of bad bits,
yeah.
Welcome to NetSurfer Pro.
Honestly, that's both a great tagline and a great t-shirt concept, is
yeah.
Stuck in a time loop of bad bits.
That's good. Oh man, TM. This is now a copyrighted episode, of course. But hey, thank you very much for listening to NetSurfer Pro, a whirlwind ride through the World Wide Web.
That's not what this is.
Wait, yeah, this is Talk Server Show. Oh my god, it's been so long. I'm so sorry. Hang on, wait. You have to switch chairs with me, because I'm the host this time.
Excuse me.
Okay. All right. Man, we really need to get a bigger host chair.
We need to get a bigger recording studio first.
Yeah, we've currently just been, renting out the closet of a Denny's. And, oh boy, is it hard to find an hour in which Denny's just isn't packed.
Yeah, but it is really fun to dick around in the closet for about an hour and a half. I like the bucket.
I'm feeling pretty trapped in the closet right about now, honestly.
So, that's cool. cool trapped in the closet reference in 2024.
Yeah, they know me for my topical jokes here. Hey, welcome to Talk Surfer Show, where we're in ride through whatever we want. I'm your host this week, Galen, and with me as always is your co-host,
Matthew Marissa. And you won't believe what we're talking about today. We're only talking about two of the biggest indie games right now. Yes. Two front runners for Indie Game of the Year.
Yes. At the very least, one of them is definitely like front runner for Indie Game of the Year. And the other one might be on the Game of the Year list. We're still debating considering some of the other things, but we'll get to that one
right later.
Right now, let's talk about the thing that has gotten like Northern Lion and... There's a couple other streamers that I know are very notable for having played it as well. But, you know, just really, really subsumed a bunch of people's time.
And that is Killing People with Hammers. This is a secret state of the meme.
Yep.
Sprung on to you by surprise. just the Northern Lion clip of him going, okay, you know what? Let's kill him. Let's kill this guy. Let's beat him to death with hammers. it's a very good reaction sort of clip by default. Of just, like, pure hatred and, like, sort of the crowd tendency to turn against someone, very mob mentality. But then people started putting it with things where people have hammers, like Ice Climbers.
Yeah, Ice Climbers is good. There was a Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga one.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's a Kirby one eventually as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kirby and, like, the hammer partner. And then it's like Wispy Woods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Get on that meme creators.
Yeah, get on that meme. Get on that. Also, get on Northern Lion as far as meme stocks go, because he's going to the moon.
Yeah. So the way I put it is that a lot of Germa people are emigrating over to Northern Lion.
Yeah.
Now that Germa's like mostly retired, they got to go somewhere.
Yeah. It's a bunch of people who want to watch Twitch for some reason. I kid. I like Germa a lot, and I like everything I've seen of Northern Lion, which is not a lot, but everything I've seen of Northern Lion is really good.
Except for his sheer unbridled misogyny.
Yeah. Oh man. For clarity,
it's a bit,
but it's a really funny bit.
It's a really funny bit. Look, gender euphoria for me is when I watch the Northern Lion misogyny supercut and go, I do really like sushi though.
So
but,
yes.
But so Bellatro, I would definitely say he was one of the early people on it and was at least partially responsible for the popularization of Bellatro.
Yep.
Bellatro is the newest in the new budding micro genre of casino game roguelite, joining Luck Be a Landlord, and now there's a roulette one that I don't remember the name of, but it was something funny.
Yeah, it's a flight of three, and some may say three doesn't make a genre, and to them I say, Star Wars.
Yeah. So
yeah,
that's true. The Star Wars genre.
True. Yeah, so Bellatro is the newest, like, a new roguelite. A roguelite deck builder,
mm-hmm.
Where the trick is, of course, that the decks that you play are poker decks.
Ah, and the trick, I see.
Aha, that you could, like, trick-taking.
Oh my god, hold on. Okay, continue, but we'll discuss what I just realized in a second.
Gotcha. So yeah, the idea of the game is that you start with a deck, normally a standard 52-card deck, and there are various means of buffing your deck. Primarily what you're looking to do is increase your chips and your multiplier. You have chips, which is primarily just whatever the card is worth in terms of blackjack. So 10 and face cards are all worth 10. Numbers are worth their numbers. Aces are worth 11 flat in this. So chips are, you know, one important aspect. The other important aspect, however, is that there are ways to increase your multiplier, because higher hands, like, you know, three of a kind, two pair, straight, etc., have higher values associated with those chips and those multipliers. Now, I have explained how to get chips. Mult is primarily gained through jokers, which are the equivalent of sort of like your passive items. Like in Slay the Spire, they're sort of your treasures or your, you know, boss items. Jokers are your abilities that affect various attributes of the hands you play. For example, there's, you know, a single standard joker that's just +4 mult. That's fine. Or you could have a joker that's like, hey, +5 mult for every heart card you play. And so you might get that early and be like, oh, well, I can try and, you know, try and go for a flush build around hearts. You might get things that buff, you know, face cards, aces, There's one called The Hack, which is my favorite, which was generally considered one of the strongest for a very long time, and is still pretty strong, which replays every 2, 3, 4, and 5, which is really funny because I didn't realize until a person on YouTube pointed out. It's because he's repeating the joke.
And it's bad jokes.
Yeah, and it's bad jokes. That's so good. That's yeah. such a good bit.
Yeah, so, okay, so just to pair this back a bit.
Yeah.
So essentially, when you play a poker hand, you multiply the number of chips that it's worth by the multiplier, and that's the amount of chips you get. The game is split up into multiple blinds, and each blind has a chip requirement. And as long as you pass that requirement within a certain amount of hands played, then you beat that blind.
Yep.
These are like your encounters. So they start off pretty low, pretty easy. It's like 300 chips, but that's not super hard to get with like a better hand, like a full house or a straight or something.
Yeah.
But then they start to ramp up wildly in the chips required, and you don't really get many chances to increase the amount of hands you actually play. It's yeah. usually around 4 to 5 hands per blind.
So you may be asking, well, if you have, you know, only 4 or 5 hands and you have jokers, is that like the entire game? No, because the other trick is that there are like 3, I think there are 3 to 4 main cards you can buy. There are standard playing cards to add to your deck, just, you know, add a new card. There are tarot cards, which primarily interact with your deck. Specifically, some of the most obvious ones are there are bonus cards gotten from the Emperor. It's not the Emperor. It's the Hierophant. The Hierophant turns cards into bonus cards, which are worth plus 30 chips to whatever their value is. And the Empress has plus 4 mult to the card, which if you can, you know, if you can, for example, imagine like having a mult on a 5 and then having the Hack that, like, you know, plays the 5 and then plays the 5 again, that will double the mult.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see where the trick comes in, essentially.
Right. Additionally, the tarot cards can also, like, change the suit of the card or change the rank of the card.
Yep.
Meaning you can have more than 4 of a given number, or, you know, more than the normal allotted amount of cards of a given number plus suit.
Yeah, yeah. That's part of the deck building experience, essentially, is if you are forward thinking enough, you can, you know, have a deck that is a lot of face cards and then, you know, a joker that's like face cards get plus 30 and then, you know, replay every face card, etc., etc. The other 2 cards that you have are planet cards. Planet cards are how you upgrade your poker hands. They are a little easy, like they are a little more useful early on. They drop a little bit later, although if you have there are things that have synergies with poker cards. I won't get terribly into it. However, one of the fun things is that the way that all of it is themed is really nice. Like Pluto, for example, is high card, which is kind of lovely. Then you have Mercury for pair. You have, I think, Venus is 3 of a kind. Earth is full house. That's funny. Like, mm-hmm. That's really sweet. I like that. Yeah, there's just the theming of the planet cards themselves are very fun, especially when you get into secret hands. More on that later. But, like I said, that is how you upgrade your hands. And hand upgrade is a part that can help, but is usually more helpful in the early game. Although it's worth noting that higher hands get more upgrades. So, for example, if you upgrade straight flush, the highest hand by default, then you'll get a lot more added to that because straight flushes are generally harder to make. Whereas if you make just, you know, flush or pair or high card, you're going to get lower mults, lower chips for every card, for every planet you use.
Yeah.
Finally, there are spectral cards, if you'd like to explain that.
So spectral cards are weird.
Yep.
They are kind of like tarot cards in that you can get them and spend them and they typically transform other cards, though they can do a wild mix of things from like changing. So whenever you open a pack of tarot cards or spectral cards, it tends to open up like a selection of like, what, 7 or 10 cards from your deck,
yes.
Randomly determined.
It is, I believe, however high your hand size.
However your hand size is, yeah. Your cards in hand. So when you open one of these packs, you get like 2 or 3 of the given card to choose from. And then there's more based on how expensive the pack is. And sometimes you can get multiple from the same pack. It's all just a bunch of variables. But you have like those cards to actually affect. So if you get the lover, not the lovers, if you get, say, the moon, which turns up to three cards selected in your hand into clubs, then you have to choose from among the three that are in the selection of a hand that it gave you at that time.
Yeah.
So spectral cards can, like, change every card in that hand into the same number or the same suit. It can destroy random cards in your hand, removing them from the game for the rest of the run, but giving you a ton of money. It can change up the jokers you have, giving you, like, legendary jokers, which are really powerful but almost impossible to get.
Yep.
Or you can just get multiple copies of the same joker, which is usually hard to do, or so many different things. They're very strong. I do also want to mention that there are vouchers, which yes. change after every boss blind, and the vouchers always cost $10, but they're usually very strong.
Yeah.
$10 is, like, fairly expensive, especially early on, but this is, like, one of the only ways to get more hands played per blind.
Yeah.
Also, you have a number of discards available per blind, which is you can choose up to 5 cards in your hand to discard and draw that many.
Yeah, the values that you as a player will focus on are hands you can play, which is the blue number, which is the amount of hands that you are allowed to play, just like, you know, play the hands, get the chips, etc. Discards, like you mentioned, lets you discard from hand. The money, which you also mentioned, which is earned every round. And then the hand size, which is how many hand, like, how many cards you draw off at the beginning of every round, slash, you know, your hand size, the cards you draw. One of my main criticisms of the game is that hand is used for two of these
yes.
variables.
Yes.
I feel like cards in hand, while more cumbersome, might be clearer for the second, you
so
know?
here's okay, so this is a bit in Magic where Mark Rosewater gets really mad, not really mad, I'm joking about that part, I'm exaggerating to make a point, that the game uses the word counter for two separate things, and yeah. like he's like, hey, don't, if you're making a new board game, do not use the same word for two different mechanics, because that can confuse people. So here's my proposition. Rename hands as in the times you play cards from your hand to tricks.
Ah.
To keep in line with common card game nomenclature. You know, something like bridge or spades. Those use tricks.
Yeah.
You could even call them books if you wanted, though that's kind of stupid. Or melds. There are other card game terms for, like, an individual round that would work better here, because round is, like, the set of blinds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing too.
Or no, it's ante?
So
yeah. Okay.
the game as it is played is three blinds. It is small blind, big blind, boss blind.
Boss blinds have big effects that can sometimes fuck you over tremendously.
Yep. Your most basic version is just, hey, all heart cards are disabled. Just if a card has a heart suit, you can't play, like, you know, you can play it, but, like, any special abilities it has don't matter. You won't get any chips from playing it. It will count for the purpose of, like, you know, if you have 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, ace, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and the 5 is disabled, it will still be a straight, but you won't get anything from that 5, and if you had mult on that 5, it won't count.
My pancreas is disabled.
True. I'm very sorry for your pancreas. Not the rest of you, though.
Yeah. Great. So yeah, the boss blinds, they can fuck you over. There's one that's like, you only play one hand this round, and that always catches me.
Oh, yeah.
Because
the needle.
When I'm not needle. Paying attention, I don't read what the boss blind says sometimes, and then I just do a hand because I'm like, I just want to throw this away. And then I die, and I'm like, God fucking damn it, if only I read the words on the screen.
I always find myself fucking up because I will have something in hand that's like, oh, if your first hand is a 6 and only a 6, destroy it and get a spectral card, mm-hmm. which is a great Joker effect. Except then I'll be like, oh, I'll just play a 6 real quick. Oh, it was the needle. Oh, mm-hmm. I'm dead. Yeah, the blinds themselves as well, it should be noted, one of the considerations is that the small and big blinds have the ability to skip them. Skipping blinds gives you tags, which can give you things like a mega pack of varying things like jokers or tarot cards, planet cards. It can also do things like, after you defeat the boss blind, get $15. or double your money up to a certain limit. And so they are genuine considerations. I personally, I've wisened up on the fact that you shouldn't be abusing them, but I have personally generally stuck to a strat of re-rolling until I find two pretty good tags to get, and then starting my run by getting those two tags, and then kind of, you know, just rolling for a couple of full houses for the 600 at the first blind.
And I have too much pride to do that, so I just play until I lose.
Sorry, that was really loud.
I don't like re-rolling games like that. Which I've learned is why I lose at Civ so much isn't because I'm bad at it. It's because the good players just re-roll a whole bunch until they get a good start.
Yeah, I...
That's neither here nor there, though. I'll accept that this could be a relatively scrubby mentality, but it's just a different way of playing the game.
Thus far, I haven't gotten far enough that I will get to, like, second Annie and be upset and restart or anything. If I start a run, I will try to see it through fully, even if I ultimately know I'm gonna fail. But boy howdy, sometimes you get to the point where you're just obviously going to fail and you just kind of sigh deeply.
Yeah. So there's three things I really want to talk about with this game.
Yes.
For one thing, genius game. Like,
oh, yeah.
Okay, deck building card games are still very popular and still very saturated, and very few have reached the heights of Slay the Spire,
yeah.
Which itself is going to have a sequel, by the way.
Yeah, speaking of which, Slay the Spire 2, coming out soon. Love the skeleton character. Love the curvy skeleton character.
Absolutely slaying, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, we get the Ironclad and the Silent back, and apparently the Defect shed his skin. And he's like, I'm Sans now.
In transed her
yeah,
skin.
Yeah, and transed her skin, I apologize.
And then the Watcher is busy in Fraymakers.
Well, the Watcher is currently watching, and the Peeper is currently peeping.
So. Yeah, so, okay, but so Balatro, like, that itself is a genius idea. And I welcome the casino game roguelites.
Yeah.
Especially if it keeps gambling addicts out of the casino. Because what would you rather do? Have someone play slot machines or play luck via landlord, which requires a bit of strategy. But in this case, it's poker. And poker itself is a deep game that's a bit more than just pure luck, like slot machines are. Poker is a bit more strategic. And that comes out a lot more here, I think, because, like, it's not about bluffing at all or reading hands or trying to do any of that bullshit. It is purely just hand sculpting, but, like, you know, you can flex your card counting muscles. If you're in, it makes it easy to do that.
Yeah.
So this is another big thing, is that you can always see the remaining contents of the deck. So you could be like, oh, I still have 3 fives left in my deck, so I could try to go for, like, a full house with fives or a four of a kind off fives. And then also, like, you can always view the value of each poker hand, which is great. So like, it makes it pretty accessible, even if you're not super familiar with poker hands.
Yep.
I think also the visual feedback of, like, if you play a pair, just two cards that are the same number and then, the, you know, three other random cards, you only see the big flashy plus bloops from the two cards. But, like, when you play a full house, you get every card in your hand blooping and plussing.
Yeah.
And so, like, there's good visual feedback that probably helps new players be like, oh, this is a better thing I want to go for.
Yeah. The other thing that I really love, too, is that, so I've run into a lot of people who are like, you know, oh, I don't really know how to play poker, who have then picked up the game and gotten super into it. And I think what helps with that is that poker as an actual game, I would argue that the literal values themselves are some of the least important parts of poker. As far as, like, actually playing poker, the real game itself is about folding 50 times until you get pretty good hands, going in on the hands that are, you know, pretty good, and then seeing if you can, seeing how far you can fleece people.
You know, I'm mad because that is the same thing as how you play this game, is folding 50% of the hands.
Yeah, I mean, that's how poker is, though.
I know, I understand that. I'm only now making that connection and how fitting it is.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, the values themselves, while they are handy to know at a moment's glance, the fact that it is pretty much always available there, it is also really readable. Like, it is all in, you know, order of just lowest to highest. And the fact that, like you said, there is no bluffing, there's no human element here. It's purely a statistics and numbers game, which I think kind of helps, like, It is entirely a game of looking at your deck, looking that you have, you know, three aces left, and wondering if you should pitch that pair that you currently have, thinking about trying to, you know, eke out that last little edge to get those four aces or whatever. Like, it is a game about that. And so, and just on those merits, it has the highs and lows of some of my best Slay the Spire runs. Like, it is staggeringly brilliant and simple. I also love, like, it doesn't, it has a wonderful design because it harkens directly to the poker, like, video poker gambling games that you see in fucking, that you see in
Illinois gas stations.
Yeah, gas stations, which is, you know, great. But that fits very well. That fits very well for this specific style, because it looks a little skeezy, and there's a little joker guy who every time you fail says some bullshit to you. And it just, it kind of fits perfectly of, like, when you lose, it gives you the vibe of, yeah, that's how poker is. And when you win, it gives you, like, you know, oh, you really did overcome a bunch of challenge.
Yeah, so I also want to note a few more things about the game.
Yeah.
So the design is super modular, which is great. There's a lot of systems that interlock in very interesting ways. A big example is what actually a card can contain. There's like three traits that a card can have, which are the properties, the material, and seal. And so like properties are like the bonus or multiplier. Material is like gold or silver.
Yep.
Which have different effects. And then seal is literally a little stamp that goes on the card. And these all can be combined in different ways that can then be, like, explored in interesting ways. So, like, Red Seal is the most notable one because it's just replay the card.
Yeah.
Or re-trigger the card, which is important because re-trigger applies both when it's in play and when it's in your hand. That matters because, let's say, for example, Silver adds a multiplier, which, by the way,
actually
steel
yeah. is the card.
So steel, sorry, I forgot silver doesn't exist. Steel adds a multiplier, which multiplies your multiplier before the multiplier multiplies your chips.
Yeah, speaking of which, multiplier is also an integral part of this game. It's kind of
it's busted.
It's sort of the end game section. Like, about halfway through, you really do want to have at least one, if not a couple of cards that give you multiplier.
Shoutouts to Bonfire and Throwback Joker.
Yeah, I love Bonfire. Throwback Joker, oh god, especially the way I play, Throwback
yeah.
Joker is always worth it. I skip so much because, especially later challenge runs that you have to do for progress will make it so, for example, the small blind doesn't have any reward by default, which is both very handy early on because you go, well, there's no reward for doing this. I'll just get the tag. But it's also pretty handy later on because every once in a while, once you have the means to get interest on money or what have you, you will sometimes look at those and just play through them anyway to get the, like, interest and then get the shop. It's a really fun, interesting consideration in the later challenges.
Even then, like, at the start, sometimes I look at the boss blind or I look at the big blind and I'm like, I'm going to need something else. So
yeah.
I'd rather go to the shop to try to get something than, like, take this tag that, like, might not help me necessarily.
Yeah.
There's a lot of decisions and nothing is, like, a guarantee, which is always really good for this type of game.
Yep.
The last thing I want to say is that it's really funny.
Yeah.
So, like, I think this is mostly a game based around telling jokes to the player, but, like, they're good jokes. The main thing is that the jokers are funny, which makes sense. They're jokers.
Yeah.
I think, like, the concept of a joker in card games, like, you take your pack of 52 card deck, your 52 card deck in a pack. That's not a 52 card pack.
It's
like a 54 card pack.
And if you buy some of the bullshit from Bicycle, they usually have like two other cards.
Yeah.
One of them is a double-sided back card, and the other side is please follow us on Instagram and Twitter and Vibo.
Which is stupid because if you have 54 cards, that's exactly six sheets of playing cards printed out.
Yeah.
That's playing card math. Is a single standard playing card size card is 1/9 of a piece of letter paper.
Ah, yeah, because 54 is, yep, 9x9. That's yeah.
That's just a fun behind-the-scenes board game production tip secret. So, industry secret. But so Jokers are reinvigorated into like wacky bonuses and fun things, and like some of them even allow you to drastically change up how you play. Like there's one that lets straight skip numbers.
Yeah.
So you can do like 1, 3, 5, and 7 and it counts as a straight. Well, 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, I guess.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you can skip just one number in the middle. Or there's one that lets you play, what is it? It lets you play straights or flushes with only 4 cards.
Yeah, the four finger card is you can play straights and flushes with only 4 cards. So, which also means that if you have 4 hearts and 4 straight, you know, a 6, 7, 8, 9 and 4 hearts in 5 cards, that counts as a straight flush. For example.
Yeah. Also, four fingers is great because a hand has 5 fingers and you're playing a hand of cards.
Yeah.
But the 4 fingers card is drawn to look like a cartoon hand. You know, very like Mickey Mouse or The Simpsons.
Yeah.
That sort of proportions. And that's the thing is like so many Jokers are just really funny bits. Like you mentioned, the hack is a great one.
There's the trading card Joker where if you play or if you discard a single card as your first discard, you sell it for $3, which is, one, great. You actually were the one who hit me to the fact that you're technically selling it.
Yeah.
The way it's worded is you just destroy it and you get $3. But, like, that's so fun and in theme. And the Joker itself is designed very, like, silly, like, overcomplicated trading card.
Yeah.
It's clearly not...
It has a stat line, it has a text box, it has, like, a cost in the corner.
It's almost as readable as Vanguard. That's your skewering Vanguard joke for today for me.
Yeah.
Come back next week when I'll make a joke about how all the card art is bad.
That's a good one. Runner is just funny because it scales. It gives you more chips based on every time you play a straight, but it's because a straight is also called a run.
Yep.
Like, a lot of really clever wordplay, and then a lot of just really clever ideas.
Yeah, there's a Wii Joker, which is literally just a normal Joker, but, like, you know, a little bit smaller, which gains power every time you play a 2. It gains chips. And that, like, it's torn between, like, a number of normaler examples, like the ones that give mult per suit, which themselves do have fun names like Lusty Joker, Greedy Joker, and the, like, more sort of conceptual or out there ones. There's also a very fun aspect as well of, like, digging into card games themselves, like, you know, standard 52 card games, like Ride the Bus is mm-hmm. its own thing. It gives you +1 multiplier, but it loses all multiplier whenever you play a face card.
Yeah.
There's really fun theming as far as, like, face cards equals people. So one of the things you can unlock, I swear we'll stop talking about this, there's a lot to this game. If we have not sold you on it already, this game gets our full endorsement.
If we haven't sold you on it already, then I apologize to Balatro.
Yeah.
Because clearly we're not doing a good job.
One of the things you unlock is new decks. And a lot of them change the starting values. One of my favorites that I've made some of the most progress with is +$10. That's very handy early on. However, some of the decks come with entirely different insides. And so there is Abandoned deck, which has no face cards. There's also a Checkered deck, which is all hearts and spades. There's, I know, a deck that has, I think it has, like, double the amount of face cards, just, like, King, King, Queen, Queen, Jack, Jack, and then, like, just the top 5 of the number cards, which is also very fun. I think that's, like, Crowded deck. Yeah, it does a lot of really fun theming with a lot of the ideas it presents. It uses all of the, you know, history of poker really well, and just poker, the game itself, really well.
Great game.
Excellent game.
Also, I forgot, my favorite Joker is the walkie-talkie, which makes 10s and 4s give you bonus multiplier.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like 10s and 4s give you 10 plus chips and 4 times multiplier.
Yeah.
Or plus 4 multiplier, yeah.
So good.
10-4. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, man. So, yeah, Balatro is what we've both been playing pretty recently. Now it's time to go on to, however, what I have been playing before what you play.
Mm-hmm.
So, I have been playing another game that has seen just... far too much success to... Well, I'd say too much. Far more success than they expected. Which was
which is Balatro, psych!
Balatro, psych!
We're back to Balatro!
Which was Helldivers 2. Helldivers 2 was a trailer that came out that I instantly got hyped for and then forgot it existed. And then it came out like a couple months later. I think it got delayed because there was it was originally going to come out around a bunch of big releases. It waited so that it came out around a lower release period. It came out a few months after Palworld, I think like a few weeks after Palworld actually, and completely wiped it off the fucking map.
Along with several million bugs.
Yes. So Helldivers 2, if you have not heard of it, Helldivers 2 is essentially I almost said Stardew Valley.
It's essentially Stardew Valley if you did the entire opposite of Stardew Valley.
It's essentially Stardew Valley, but you're in the war that's
You
happening.
Go into space, you shoot bugs in the middle of a war, you extract them for oil. Wait, no, this is just the mining portion of Stardew Valley.
So it is essentially Starship Troopers, but not. By which I mean, Helldivers 1 was a top-down shooter that had very similar theming. It takes place 100 years before Helldivers 2. And the idea is you work for the Federation of Super Earth. Super Earth is this incredibly xenophobic, incredibly militaristic, highly colonial, highly industrialized, managed democracy is the term that they call themselves. And you are the Helldivers, who are the military force of almost entirely like 18 to 20 somethings who have been fed propaganda all their lives and are all too happy to go die for Super Earth. You throw yourselves at various objectives and at hundreds, if not thousands, of enemies in a single mission with the intent of doing one of a number of things. The end result is essentially just a four-player squad co-op style. It's like Battlefield in that it has sort of a perpetual battlefield system whereby, you know, things that exist actually exist. Enemies actually do patrols that, you know, look for you, and those patrols go towards where sound was, for example. If enemies are smart enough, like the robots, they will even see the hell pods that are being dropped, and they will, you know, actively seek them out. So it's got Battlefield there. It is a third-person shooter, which I know Battlefield isn't, but the third-person shooter physics themselves are very physical, a little bit milsimmy, by which I mean your gun has a physical weight and a physical presence. When you aim, your character takes the time to have to move their gun, and if you're carrying a gun that is a lot heavier, then it will be a lot harder to actually wield it. The milsim elements are mostly like, there's a couple of them, but it's mostly things like, if you hold reload, you can fiddle with a bunch of knobs that are like, oh, make the scope 50 meters, 100 meters, 200 meters. Make this a single fire, burst fire, auto fire. And not all guns have all of them, but point being, it is essentially, the gameplay itself is just enough of a milsim to be interesting. It has, you know, some of those elements, but it is minus all of the boring parts because you are not... A highly trained, you know, military soldier on an incursion. You are a Helldiver, one of humanity's elite, meant to go and, you know, bring death to our enemies while getting us the resources we need. And so, like, you are, the way I've continued to describe it is, you are a Imperial Guardsman who has been hyped up to believe they are a Space Marine in terms of 40K lore, and it is great. It is some of the best gameplay I've ever played in practically any video game. Let me be clear, I have a lot of problems with this game. I have sunk 100 hours into it, and I am definitely past the honeymoon period. However, Helldivers 2 succeeds in so many ways, in the gameplay department, in the theming and like humor department. It is an incredibly funny game. We'll talk about that, don't worry. It is like some of my favorite weapons and, you know, stratagems and, like, some of my favorite things I have thrown at enemies. There is a 380-millimeter, like, orbital barrage that you can just chuck at a big base, hike back, and watch the carnage. And you'll probably not hit anything, but boy howdy will it cause carnage. Yeah, so Helldivers 2 is a video game that I have a whole lot of opinions on, in part because It is an incredible video game that got very, very popular very, very quickly. Too popular, even. There was an entire period of, like, about 2 weeks to a month where the servers were straight up at capacity, and it was hard to play it because they had to, you know, they had to get more support for more players. But all those have since been resolved, and so the end product itself has had time to kind of stew a little bit. The developers themselves, Arrowhead, they've kind of ingrained themselves with a whole lot of goodwill really early on. I think part of that is because Helldivers 1 had its own, you know, its own pretty tight-knit community. Arrowhead themselves have a history of being pretty decent devs. And while this was helmed by, while this was published by Sony, and despite the fact that this is a game that is a live service with a battle pass and, like, you know, ongoing online elements, it is also one of the very few games that uses that in interesting ways. So, okay, to break it down a little bit farther, this is a game that has a premium currency. This is a game that has battle passes. This is a game that is a live service. However, the matches themselves are like peer-to-peer matchmaking, meaning that even if everything went offline, you could still play the video game.
I didn't know it was peer-to-peer.
Yeah, I also thought it was, I thought it was central server as well, but no, apparently, you know, if you have Steam friends who you could play with, then even without a central server doing all the stuff it currently is, you would be able to play. The battle pass itself is not able to be, the progress you make on it is not able to be purchased. It is done with War Bond medals, which are more or less just a means of gating progress itself. Like, the main unlocks that you get, there is one free battle pass that has a whole bunch, the main content, essentially, the season one content. And so, like, the language of content delivery is battle passes. It is not inherently, it's kind of like the Deep Rock Galactic battle pass I would liken it to, of where it is progress, and it is progress that you can even, in the case of Helldivers, you can buy the different battle passes, but it kind of mitigates some of the worse aspects, I think. And then, the other thing here, the premium currency. It has a premium currency. You can buy super credits. Super credits are the premium currency. However, super credits are also earned mid-mission, and a lot of premium currencies say that, and then they really aren't earned in a decent rate. You can find, like, 10 to 40 cents pretty much every mission, and there's a small chance of getting an entire dollar from every pickup. I've pretty easily gotten 3 different battle passes, and I intend to get the 4th one pretty soon, because I'm already at, like, $5. Like, it is a case where you can spend the extra money and immediately get these battle passes, but if you just play it in general, it's more or less going to be standard progress eventually. And, I will even happily say you could still probably criticize that. You could still criticize all of these elements. Just because it is one of the best examples of these doesn't mean they aren't kind of still predatory. But the philosophy that Arrowhead, especially the CEO of Arrowhead, has kind of put out is one of, we don't want to, you know, make a mid-game that people have to pay money to make a good game. We want to make a good game that people want to pay money for to get the cool stuff.
That people have to pay money to make a mid-game.
Oh, God. So, I'm trying not to monopolize this because I do have a whole lot of opinions on this game, but I will try to keep them short because one of the major points of contention, I'll say, we've had a couple of patches now. We have seen some weapons become powerhouses and then get nerfed. Some weapons become, you know, ubiquitous with a certain playstyle and then get nerfed. And I'm not 100% confident in Arrowhead's ability to balance things well just yet. So there are 3 specific weapons here. There is patch 0, Breaker, and Railgun. Breaker was and still is an exceptional shotgun weapon. The Railgun was honestly kind of busted for a hot minute. But the reason that they were big was kind of because there were ongoing problems with the bugs. Specifically, there were way too many chargers, and railguns were very easy to strip the armor of the chargers. And so they ended up, and this is a phrase I'll use a lot, kicking the railgun and the breaker in the head a bit, While reprioritizing other weapons, they buffed, like, fire damage, they buffed the arc thrower, they buffed other things to be like, hey, please use some of these other stratagems, we understand that this is currently the meta. Now, they did that alongside rebalancing the game, and this happened again with the Slugger. The Slugger personally affected me quite a bit. The Slugger, before the nerf, was really powerful. It had a very, very hard stagger. It was a precision weapon that rewarded you with a really nice and satisfying headshot. Still does, actually. I still use the Slugger. It's still very good. And, like, it was a weapon that required pretty high skill to use, but rewarded you with being really manageable for the robots. And I need to I need you to understand, Helldivers 2, at the very least, used to be so fucking difficult. Like, for required progress, you have to play on level 7. Level 7 has all of the Ultra Samples. Ultra Samples are the rarest type of samples that you need. Level 7 is so incredibly balls-grindingly difficult. Like, I cannot impress upon you. And this comes from somebody who is, I will be frank, good at video games and pretty great at Helldivers 2. Like, I do not mean to toot my own horn. I try not to, you know, I try not to give myself a lot of those, but, like, I have played 100 hours of Helldivers 2. I have played ranked Fortnite. Like, I have played video games at high levels, and Helldivers 2 requires 110% effort always. Asterisk. I have recently played the new balancing with the new mission type as well. They seem to have rebalanced it. They actually, I think they have addressed it and made the game quite a bit easier at the very least at level 7, which is so nice if they have done that.
Yeah, so we talked about this a few days ago just personally, and my like proposition was to sort of make level 7 a bit easier and then just move the current rest of the difficulties up a bit in like a Hilbert's Hotel sort of way.
Yeah.
And it's kind of seems like that's what they did.
More or less. My assumption, I ended up playing on level 8 because I was like, level 7 is incredibly manageable. Let's see how level 8 is. And it seems like level 8 was about as unmanageable as level 7 was before. So I would not be surprised if they kind of, you know, shifted it down a bit and, like, either Helldiver, the ninth difficulty, is still the highest, you know, the highest it's been, or they're gonna be like, we have Helldiver 2 difficulty at level 10.
That's what the game is.
Yeah.
It definitely seems like the devs behind it have a intent philosophy on, like, making the high difficulties really, 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 really difficult. And I think, like, when progression and difficulty like that are so sort of tied together, it can be tough to find a balance that is, like, happy between both the devs' sort of desire for the game and the player base's experience with the game. And I definitely think there is a discussion to be had whether, like, having progression tied behind it is, like, a good thing at all. Because from what I understand, it is notable progression.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I wouldn't blame the devs for being like, we want to have stuff that's only unlockable for, like, the hardest, corest of gamers.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do think there's a lot of gamers that have the feeling of, like, I don't want to be gated from things. I want other people to be gated from things.
Yeah, it really is. I think you made the comment of, like, a lot of people, or you kind of pointed it out of, you know, a lot of the gamer TM crowd who would otherwise be like, ah, just get good at Dark Souls, scrub nub, kind of suddenly changed their tune when it was a video game that they like that they couldn't play.
Yeah.
Now, one aspect of this is that the reason that I like the live service, I will say, is that it seems like, and I don't have insider knowledge, but it seems like what they basically did was intentionally released it in a slightly more content-light state than the content that they had, specifically to then drip feed out some of that content. For example, since the game has started, they have added a mech, which is great. They have added an HMG, which sucks. They've added the Quasar Cannon, which is basically a reusable, like, rocket launcher style gun. They've also done various things where, like, in response to the community succeeding a task, they would be like, ah, because you've succeeded, everybody gets the railgun stratagem for the next 12 hours or what have you. They did that with expendable anti-tanks specifically when they introduced a new enemy type as well, which was very fun. They introduced the counter in addition to introducing the enemy in order, and then they take the counter away to be like, all right, figure it out yourself, asshole. And so, yeah, like, that is part of why I really like the live service aspect, is because I have rarely ever gotten a chance to play a live service game live. And this is one of the very few where it's like, this is a live service game that's not only actually putting out good content, but if they stopped putting out content today and were like, actually, we're so sorry, we just, you know, we gambled away all that money playing Balatro, I would be like, you know what? What they have right now is still pretty fucking good.
The aspect of like doing things in reaction to the community, or like community progress being a thing, reminds me of like Blazeball.
Yeah.
The idea of the live service game is an opportunity to be in dialogue with the players, to sort of DM the world. And I'm not referring to Joel.
Yeah, Joel the DM, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a guy named Joel. He DMs the game. It's pretty great. Speaking of which, actually, in terms of that, one of the other fun things about Arrowhead is that with Helldivers 2, they were very interactive with the community. And, like, they would have regular community days where they'd add in capes and stuff from the community that they've suggested. They seemingly are doing similar things. For example, Malevolon Creek immediately became a meme because, and the reason for that is very specific. This is going on historical record. So you start the game, you play Bugs. Bugs are what's on the front. You play Bugs. Bugs is great. Bugs is fucking, like, incredibly fun. You then go play bots, and the first place that was available, or at least one of the very first places, was Malevolon Creek. And it was basically Space Vietnam. You are under so much fire constantly. And I love bots, but, like, it was such an immediate change of pace that so many people, like, made a million different jokes about it being Space Vietnam. And so it became this, you know, this little symbol of the community, and to the point where in quick succession High Command, quote unquote, came out and said that we lost one of the major orders because people were too busy at Malevolon Creek and fighting Bugs instead of the bots at that point. And then, like, a couple days after, put out a cape in honor of those we lost at Malevolon Creek. Like, it is explicitly a Malevolon Creek centered cape, which then some people in the community started killing people who were wearing that because they were like, you're the reason we lost. It's like, that's sociology right there. I fucking love it. And that's not even the dev's fault, like, for clarity. It is so great for the devs to, like, on one hand, be like, yeah, this is probably why you lost. And then on the other hand, encourage that behavior that's so in theme. Speaking of, I don't want to talk about this too long. I do want to very briefly get this out. Okay. Helldivers 2 is a satire. It is not even a really complex one half the time. Like, it is so... The ministries in Super Earth are called ministries. There's the Ministry of Unity, which gets rid of, you know, dissident talk. And there's the Ministry of Truth, who, you know, puts out all of the propaganda that they have.
Wait, they actually have a Ministry
of Truth? Yeah, they have a Ministry of Truth and a Ministry of Defense, which I suppose we also have.
But tears, like, off calendar that says whatever year Helldivers takes place, yeah, in.
Like, yeah, it's just the it is so... Every single line in the game is hilarious because it is all crap sack. There are three people you can talk to on your ship. There's the shipmaster, who's kind of like a sergeant rank person. There's the democracy officer, who is like the head honcho, the commissar. And then there's the shipwright, who is just like a random mechanic. And they all, you know, provide their own fun little bits. For example, the shipwright, it includes such wonderful nuggets as, like, you know, it's not much, but I donate 50% of every one of my paychecks to the war effort. Or, like, yeah, thanks to Super Earth, I can actually use these tools. They loaned them out to me so that I can, you know, work on this ship. And that's got a pretty low interest rate, too. Like, the shipwright person gives you such nuggets as, like, everyone knew that Cyberstan was an automaton holding facility before, you know, after the uprising. But what they don't know is how many good men and women it takes to to work such a facility, and the automatons will pay for what they've done to them. Like, again, this is text. It is not subtext. It is not reading between the lines. This is not fucking, you know, this is not Fight Club, where, like, you have to kind of, you know, it's supposed to trick you into thinking you're the good guy initially, and then, you know, slowly you unravel the mystery. Like, this is, it's like if you were playing a game as the Nazis. All of your shit has skulls on it. Because skulls are what makes us human, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just...
It's
I know that the gamer demographic is incredibly self-selecting and incredibly, like, I have ranted at length about why I believe that Warhammer is pretty at fault for the fascism in their own community. Like, I have explicitly, you know, gone on tangents about how they should have explicitly course corrected multiple times before, and they didn't because it was, you know, because they were buying shit, basically. This isn't even a case of that. Arrowheads are pretty provably, like, based in terms of politics.
It seems like they're trying to do what they can to curtail any, like, actual fascist believers who think the game is an unironic, like, support of that.
Yeah.
But, like, you can't do it to a certain extent. Like, they have done what they could by making it so blatant. Like, the bugs, part of the reason you're killing so many bugs is because they produce a compound called, like, 710.
Yeah, E710.
Which is
should've oil. Should have been E621.
Shut up. Shouts out to that bill getting vetoed, by the way. I don't even know what it's about. I just know all the furry coomers are joking about it, so.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
I'm proud of them.
So, yeah, but, like, that's just oil flipped around. You know, it's very clearly you are fighting them for oil because that makes the money.
Yeah.
And then also, apparently, the bugs were created by Super Earth, and they, yeah, like, escaped containment.
The deeper lore is that the bugs, which, by the way, the bugs are sapient. The bugs that you see, they have the same intelligence as you or me. The bugs were a sapient, peaceful race that Super Earth didn't like because they were ugly. And while they were trying to create peace, eventually Super Earth found out that a dead bug creates oil. And so they immediately started a war.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, immediately. And the bugs became the killing machines that they are today, literally because the bugs themselves are, you know, they're hyper evolving bugs. They're your Tyranids. They're your fucking Starship Troopers bugs. They became as violent as they did because Super Earth was fighting them. So they evolved deadlier, you know, deadly in response to that. Then they were put into farms until they've recently broken free. And, like, now, you know, we have the Terminid control system, which, like, liquefies the bug's trachea, except they're mutating out of it anyway. And every time you talk to your shipwright, they're like, you know, there's apparently some few new mutations with the Terminid control system, but that's nothing to be expected. Of course, you know, again, playing the game 1 week ago, and the Terminid control system was like, yeah, it's flawless. No bug will ever be able to exist again. Or, for example, we recently eradicated the automatons. There were no more automaton missions on the map. There were only bug missions until the automatons came back in full force. And when we eradicated them, like, everything was incredibly congratulatory. Like, the president of Super Earth and High Command were like, you know, congratulations, the automaton menace has been eradicated. They come back, and the news thing is like, as we always suspected, this was just a, you know, a front for a bigger invasion.
Yeah, it's such, like, they very clearly have been studying this sort of rhetoric that is used to get people into war, aka propaganda.
Yeah.
And, like, they are just using it with full force, but to an extent, and, like, using certain words or terms that make it so obviously, like, this is not to be taken as a support of this thing.
Yeah, the Illuminate, who are coming soon, by the way, the Illuminate enemies...
Coming soon to a theater near you.
In Helldivers 1, the deep lore on them is that we went to war with them, Super Earth, went to war with them because they were at war with two other people, the bugs and the bots, and they thought that the Illuminate might have WMDs, which they wanted to procure for themselves. So that, like...
Oh, they might have WMDs, huh?
Yeah!
Huh? That's not related to any real life...
I know. God, I peeked the Microsoft. Like, it's so... And, you know, that's Helldivers 1. I don't expect everyone who's played two to play 1. I mean, literally, you know, 2 got extremely popular outside of 1's reach, which they weren't exactly expecting. That's kind of why we're here today. Yeah, it's just, again, I don't know how you make something more blatant. And this doesn't even feel, honestly, the big thing is just, it doesn't even feel like we're going to intentionally try to take it away from those damn dirty lefties. If that was what it was, I would understand it. I would understand if there were, you know, people like, we should try and reclaim it for us. Because that's the kind of stupid bullshit gamers do anyway. But, like, no, it's just this consistent willful ignorance to be like, well, if you really think about it, Super Earth is actually the best option that humanity has. They're the only option humanity has! Yeah. That's the point!
Yeah,
like
God, we're going in circles now. I think
we're going in circles. The point is,
Helldivers 2 pretty good. Yeah. Has some flaws. Gamers suck ass. Use at 11.
Basically, yeah. I didn't even get to the points of like contention that I have with Helldivers 2. I kind of will save that for like probably a video or a stream or some bullshit.
Yeah, you need some second output.
Yeah, I'm going to start a new hell. I'm going to start a new podcast. Hell. A podcast called the Hell Pod. Yes. Ah, hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that's what.
That's good. So now it's my turn to talk about a game you haven't played. And I haven't had much time to play this, but I've been playing Islands of Insight, which, for background, Lunar Games is the company that makes it. They made Prismata and Jelly is Sticky, which are both really cool games. But the lead designer, Elliot, has had this joke for a long time of, like, a multiplayer puzzle game set on an island where everyone's running around solving puzzles. Like an MMO puzzle game. I think it started as a joke of like a battle royale puzzle game, but instead of fighting each other, you solve puzzles and you have to solve more puzzles than the opponents. But it ended up becoming a real thing, sort of, because he later put out a like big recruiting like call for designers and programmers and artists. And Islands of Insight is the product, and final product rather. And it's interesting. So like, I'm a big fan of puzzle games set on islands. It's very clearly, like, Witness-inspired in a lot of ways. There's a lot of, like, perspective puzzles where you're looking at a certain spot to look at something. But what I think is interesting about Islands of Insight is also what is, I don't want to say upsetting. So the, like, mission statement of the game, the core concept is that there are a multitude of different types of puzzles of varying, like, skill levels and genres, such that sort of a little something for everybody in a way. So like a lot of the perspective driven puzzles are a bit more like hidden objects where like you see a set of globes in the sky and you have to find a spot you can stand to where they create like a circle. And then when you create the circle, you clear them out. Or like there are two cubes with symbols on them and you have to find the cubes that have matching symbols. And then you have to find a spot where you can see both of them at the same time. Those are sort of more like hidden object type stuff in that they are just about finding a thing in the environment. Then there are like, there's this one that's like, what is it called? It's like astrolabe rings or something like that, but they're interlocking metal hoops and they kind of feel like the video game equivalent of an untangling puzzle.
Those little desk ornaments that are like, you know, two horseshoes tied together that you have to physically maneuver around each other.
Yeah, one of those. The type that, like, a blacksmith would make. I think they're called blacksmith puzzles. But, like, the rings, it's like ambulacary spheres or something? Ancillary spheres? But the rings, there's a number of them. Some of them are gold, some of them are silver. And you want to stand in a spot where you can see through all the golden rings at once and then click in that spot. But you don't want to click in a spot that also sees through any silver rings. Ah. So you have to stand at the right spot where you can get, like, a clean shot.
Okay, it's an environmental puzzle. That's fine.
Sort of. It's another perspective-driven one.
Yeah.
And then, like, there are some that are just, like, invisible blocks or invisible archways that only show up if you get close to them, which feel more like you have to get lucky to find them than anything. But then you've got really interesting puzzles. There are some that are, like, paper puzzles where you can either fill in every square as white or black, and each puzzle will have different rules. So, like, you can't fill in a 4 in a row of all of cells of the same color, or, like, there's a number that shows the size of a region of one color. So, like, if it's a number 3, then you can have a region of 3 white cells or 3 black cells, and then it has to be surrounded by cells of the other color. It's a lot like Taiji, which was another puzzle game that used this sort of black and white cell mechanic in a more in-depth way, because that was the entire game. And then there's ones that are like match 3s, but they're pre-constructed match 3s. So, like, if you fuck up, then, like, you're fucked and you have to restart. They have one solution. Yeah. So you have to plan ahead in terms of, like, it's one with gravity. So you have to plan ahead as, like, I'm gonna, you know, clear these 3, which makes these blocks fall. But doing so will also ruin this set of 3 that I could make. Then they have, like, mazes that you run through. Another one that I really like is, I think they're called, like, falling blocks or something like that. Rolling blocks, maybe.
You should watch for them.
Shout out to the Invisible Walls video, by the way. But those, do you know Bloxor? I think it was called, or Bloxors?
That's the one where you have like a 1x2 block. It was a Flash game.
Yeah, it was on every Flash game website. And a little industry secret from me to you, everyone in like the Thinky Puzzles community loves that. That's like one of the best Flash puzzle games. Critics and audiences agree.
The number one Flash puzzle game in America.
Yeah, Bloxors. But it's essentially that, but sometimes there's multiple blocks and sometimes, you know, it gets a little more complex, but there's this huge variety and it almost feels like too much at times, especially when like you have, like, the hidden object ones so fucking everywhere that, like, it's like, oh, I found some globes. I'm going to stand here. Wait, I see more globes. There's so many fucking globes. It's not really a game you're meant to 100%, I think, just because of the sheer, like, variety. The sheer quantity, I mean.
It seems like a game that is giving you, kind of like you described already, it's a game that has a whole lot and is kind of asking the player, like, we're trying to facilitate every type of puzzle or a whole lot of types of puzzles that you could enjoy. So find what you like and then, you know, there should be more of it.
I can definitely see Islands of Insight puzzle tier lists being a good thing because like there's really such a drastic gap between some of these. Some of them are just platforming challenges. They have a Superman 64 fly through rings puzzle. Nice. It's not even a puzzle. The worst ones though, okay, I have to rant about this. The worst puzzles are the fractal puzzles. You are given a circle, like an aperture that has a fractal on it, and you can click and drag in order to manipulate the fractal. It's like up and down is zoom in, zoom out. To a degree, you can't go infinitely, even though it's a fucking fractal. That's the whole point. But there is a point where it stops, so there are bounds you have within to work. And then left and right, I don't really know how to describe the variable going on in left and right.
Is it like clockwise and counterclockwise? Or
no, it's like you are increasing some value in the mathematical formula creating the fractal, such that it gains more detail or like complexity. So, like, I don't really know what the word for it is, but I'm sure people who study fractals and recursion like that would have a word for it. I just don't bother looking it up right now, because this isn't an episode where we do research. This is the Talk Surfer. We can be dumbasses here. But I swear, so the goal is that it gives you an image, and you have to approximate the given image within the fractal you have. So you have to, like, dig through and explore the fractal to find the spot that looks like the spot you're given. But I swear there are some fractals that just are like jokes in either. So like normally you can be off by a pretty decent amount and it will still like give it to you by sort of zooming in to where it's supposed to be. You can approximate it, like I said. There's sort of a range of acceptable answers.
Yeah.
I swear there are some where it looks like it should be in that range and it doesn't give it to me. And I just have no idea why. And some of them are also animated to where, like, there's colors that change, which makes it even worse. And then, like, I remember I asked on the Thinky Puzzle Discord, I was like, the only puzzle type I don't get is fractals. Does anybody understand this?
And I think somebody just replied, nobody does. I was like, great.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, the fractals suck. Most of the other puzzle types are fine, if not, you know, they're not offensive like the fractals are. Like, fractals are cool, but when you put me under pressure to like, find a fucking needle in a haystack, but it's an infinitely recursive haystack, like, I don't know what to tell you, buddy. Elliot, can we just, like, replace the fractals with something else?
Replace them with Junior Jumble.
Replace them with Junior Jumble. I think word search is a lot harder.
How dare you?
Yeah. But, I mean, the game's neat. It doesn't have, like, it kind of has open world color palette problems, but there are multiple, like, regions. All of them seem to be based off more classical and historic architecture. So you start in the more Egyptian Mesopotamian land, and then going clockwise following, like, the main quest, there's like, the more, there's, like, the Greek fountains and baths sort of area with a lot of coral, and it's, like, a tide pool, and it's the best spot.
The fashion looked very Indian inspired in the, yeah, the
definitely
trailer.
It has like a Cradle of Civilization sort of feel,
yeah,
in tone. And there's a big floating diamond obelisk pyramid in the middle. So like,
oh, that's just The Sims.
Well, I was going. Well, it is sort of a Sims Plumbus, but I was going to say it's essentially The Witness or Tokitori 2 for the truly educated and based out there. Here's the thing. So, I think it wasn't super clear what the game was going to be. I feel like there was more of a promise of cooperative puzzle solving in both the, like, language used pre-development, which isn't very open to a lot of people and not really official, so I don't think it's super fair to judge it based on that. But also in terms of, like, trailers and, like, press and stuff like that, it felt like they were trying to make a game where you would play with friends and, like, solve puzzles together. But you can kind of do that with the perspective puzzles of, like, hey, you should stand here. Or, like, everyone kind of walking around. It should be worth noting, there is no in-game chat, which I think is fair, because for a smaller team that has only really developers, like, you don't have a lot of time to hire, like, chat moderators for, yeah, a fucking MMO. So, like, it's just, like, you have gestures, you have canned phrases, and you have pointing and, like, pinging. But the pinging only applies to people in your party. There is a party system in a friends list, but, like, I don't think you can message them within the friends list or party system, even if you're friends.
Yeah.
You're definitely more so meant to, like, use Discord and voice chat if you want to play together like that. But, like, the paper puzzles and the rolling blocks in the match threes, the more logic puzzle driven ones that are more about, like, following a system of rules, you cannot cooperate in those. I was doing a set of puzzles with somebody else. I don't want to spoil it because it was a really cool concept for the puzzles, but, like, it involved filling out these, like, cells of black and white squares, and I couldn't see what they were doing and they couldn't see what I was doing. So, like, we weren't really working together. It felt more like I was like, oh, there's somebody else here. And then I just kind of had to wonder what was going on in their life,
yeah,
you know? It felt weirdly lonely to see somebody else in this video game, which sounds weird because puzzle games are normally a very solitary experience, and you would think that seeing someone else alongside you would give it some amount of, like, I don't know, like, connection?
Yeah, some kind of communal feeling, but...
But I really couldn't, like, feel much of a communal feeling. I did, like, a little wave or a gesture, but, you know, it's like, there's only so much you can do. And so, I think, like, I was hoping it would be more of either, like, progress is shared, so, like, you solve puzzles to unlock a door, and then that unlocks the door for everyone. Or, like, you can see the same logic grid as your friends, and you can, like, discuss it or something. And that's just not the game that they ended up making. I think... I understand what they're going for, because it definitely feels like they went from making a cooperative puzzle game to a puzzle game you play next to other people.
Yeah.
And, like, an MMO puzzle game has been done before, by the way. Check out Puzzle Pirates.
Ooh.
Remember Puzzle Pirates? That had Puzzle PvP. Puzzle Pirate PvP players. But
Puzzle v Puzzle.
Even then, that was more like variants of arcade puzzlers, so that wasn't, like, entirely, like, you know, Sokoban and Sudoku and shit like that.
I feel like it's a line you have to kind of, it's a line to judge, whereby, like, I could see a system where it's like, there's a hub area that goes into smaller puzzle areas that you can essentially sign up for random groups of, you know, eight or whatever, or tag along with your bros. Like, I could see something like that working.
So
I could see a bigger team, like, and that's not knock against these developers, just I could see a bigger team with, like, you know, more stable funding and stuff really expanding the idea.
I was kind of hoping for, like, The Witness with Souls game co-op, where you can summon someone to your island.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was hoping. But I wanted to say that, like, so this is sort of a problem in the puzzle game scene, is that it doesn't really grow much. Because a lot of puzzle games are designed for puzzle game enthusiasts, which means they're fucking hard.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get people into puzzle games when all the new puzzle games are really difficult. I think, like, Baba was a miracle that it got as popular as it did, because Baba is a really difficult puzzle game.
Yeah.
Especially after, like, the third or fourth world, when you really start getting into the thick of it, and you have to, like, you have to perform the forbidden arts to actually create, like, a door that wins or something. Because, like, Baba is both a puzzle game that's very, like, Sokobani, but also it is a puzzle game that is about fucking with people who play puzzle games to be like, you thought you had to go across the ice? Bitch, there is no ice.
I love, there's this potent memory I have where I had bought Baba and I had played, like,
Baba
with my Reddit bird. I had played, like, you know, 3.5 levels worth of content spread across the entire game. And I remember playing it with, like, all of our friends and you together, just, like, playing it on the TV. And all of us were kind of constantly screaming at each other, like, wait, I think I understand it. Yeah. I think I understand it. I ended up being the one to get it correctly. It was one of the puzzles where you have to, like, get is and is not on top of each other.
Yeah.
And then, you know,
was that the fire and ice puzzle?
Yeah, great question. It was years ago.
I know there was one puzzle that we did that with where it was fire and ice. And this is a puzzle I think people who played the game might know, because it's like, you have a puddle of ice and you can make it fire if you want. And then you have a whole bunch of words to work with. And, like, the actual solution, it actually, it's one of the ones that made me feel the most like a magician. Like, it was, I don't even remember it because it was so complicated and it was a while ago. But anyways, like, Baba is hard, but, like, other than that, it's like a lot of the recent ones, like Sokobond Express, or just regular Sokobond, even Bonfire Peaks, like the jelly games. These are all, like, pretty difficult games, even for, you know, somebody who is decent at puzzle games. And then, you know, look at stuff that, like, a lot of, like, the really, really hardcore people play, like fucking Can of Wormholes, which looks great, but is also very difficult. It's like, it is sort of really hard to get into puzzle games, and I think there's an outreach issue. Especially because, like, when a lot of people think about puzzle games, they think of, like, Tetris or Puzzle Bobble, or they'll think of things like, I don't know, like fucking hidden object games. And so I think Islands of Insight is supposed to be a sort of olive branch / on-ramp.
Yeah.
Like, come for the match three and the, you know, scavenger hunts. Stay, hopefully, for the paper puzzles and the block zores.
Yeah, stay to hopefully get you into The Witness and, yeah, you know, other and various other.
And eventually you two will play Steven Sausage Roll. Like, it's a matter of, like, I think people just want to make fun puzzle games, but, like, they are so experienced at them that their version of that is a difficult one.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that inherently, but, like, I think in terms of wanting to get people into the genre as just, like I said, outreach, it becomes very hard to come up with ways to get people interested, especially because, like, similarly to something like a difficult platformer, these are games where you will often get stuck, and people don't like to get stuck.
If I may, I feel like a little bit of the cause might actually be, because this is something that I felt with roguelikes for a very long time before roguelikes really developed as a genre, was like, for a hot minute there, it seemed like a lot of the roguelikes were made by people who really, really liked roguelikes. And so a lot of times the things that they would do to branch out on it would be to make it, make it a lot harder, make it a lot more challenging, add a lot more towards, you know, that specific element. And that's great if you are already in the genre, but in terms of branching out, it took something like a Hades, for example, something that took the concept and made it a lot more approachable.
Or even Rogue Legacy.
Yeah, Rogue Legacy is also a really good one.
Need I remind you that they had a whole meeting to determine what a roguelike is? And for forever, if you strayed off that path, you were a heathen? That was part of the problem. The Berlin interpretation was a mistake.
Yeah. But...
You know what does follow the Berlin interpretation, by the way? Big Boo's Haunted Hideaway from Mario Party 8. Mario Party 8 is a roguelike.
Mario Party 8 is a roguelike. But I think something somewhat similar is happening, where the existing community is very insular, and so a lot of games that are made are kind of made with that community in mind, and that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing for a community to be making games for itself. But the idea of, you know, the, like, all of branch games, games that are better on-ramping to before you get to the balls-crushingly difficult stuff, that, like you said, I feel like that is an area that needs a little more development, because even Baba, which was kind of an olive branch just by right of looking and being really cute, like, just by, you know, looking really cute and having a really, really good hook, it hooked a lot of people who would not necessarily have gotten into the game.
Yeah.
But, like, I wouldn't necessarily say it was an onboard either, because I know a lot of people who played Baba but do not play other puzzle
games. That's because Baba's hard!
Yeah, because Baba's fucking difficult.
So, I don't want to make a sweeping statement about, like, gamers these days. Part of it is that people don't like to get stuck in games. They don't like to have a point where, like, they don't know what to do. That's how it's literally always been, is people just will buy walkthroughs or go on game facts and stuff. And I think, like, that is where a lot of the friction against things like Dark Souls comes in, is that those are games where you are meant to get stuck, learn, experiment, and improve. But, like, getting stuck sucks, yeah. You know? And, I mean, I take breaks from both puzzle games and Souls games when I get stuck, because I just need to not be thinking about it and let it stew in the background. But then I come back and I clear a lot more, you know, levels or areas or bosses or what have you. Like, I think it took me, like, 2 years to beat Baba, just off and on. And so, like, I think that is one thing, that it is a different experience and not everybody wants that. I think a lot of people just want to play games where they can unwind. See also Noah Caldwell's recent Diablo video. But also, I think the other thing is that there are, like, it is a skill to play puzzle games and to learn puzzle games. It's kind of like how learning a fighting game is harder than it looks. And yeah. Learning a fighting game is a skill to know, like, what to study and what's good and what's bad to study.
Yeah.
Like, you have to have a certain mindset when playing certain puzzle games that is just not really normal. And so I think a lot of devs are trying out new ways to actually, like, bring people up to that level, to teach the fundamental skills.
Yeah.
One example is Can of Wormholes has a hint system, but it doesn't just tell you, like, this move looks good. Instead, in Can of Wormholes, the hint takes you to an easier puzzle that teaches the same, like...
the same concept.
The concept that you need to solve the main puzzle. So there's a puzzle where you have to, like, back your ass way out into the ocean and then go forward. It might not be obvious at first. So then, like, you press the hint and it takes you to a puzzle that's pretty much the only move you can do. And it's like, oh, this is an option I have. How can I apply that to the main puzzle now? And I think that's incredible.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, like... like, puzzle games are often designed such that puzzles teach concepts as, like, solving them. That's a big part of Steven Sausage Roll, is, like, every level in the first two worlds or so is teaching something new, and then some. But you still have to solve the puzzle, and sometimes it feels like you're both teaching a skill and testing the skill at the same time. And I think finding ways to separate those a bit better might make it easier for some players. But anyways, like... that being said, Islands of Insight, is trying to go about it by just having a big buffet of things so that if you don't like the sushi, you can have the French fries. And, like, that's fine. I think the game's neat. The biggest problem was just that it had like, 25 gigs of cached texture files.
Yeah.
Which meant that I couldn't play it for a while because my C drive was literally running out of space. I only had, like, 20 to 15 gigs free. And so there were some games I couldn't play because I couldn't cache the temp files.
Yeah.
So I can get back to that now because I have a new C drive, but for a while I just couldn't play it even if I wanted to, because it would crash because I couldn't cache the fucking, like, grass texture.
Cache, crash, or gash. Or grass. It sounds... So, I will say, I was interested with the trailer. I think having heard you describe it, I'm a little less interested, because I was also... Yeah,
I wouldn't recommend this to my friends who don't play puzzle games.
Yeah, I was also, like, I was interested in it because I was interested in, like, oh, a way to play a puzzle game with you. That sounds kind of fun. And learning that it wasn't that was a little, like, wind out of my sails.
Yeah.
But, like, I do think the idea of a buffet puzzle game has a lot of its merits. And, you know, I hope that the dev team kind of refines the idea and, you know, maybe does something even better with it.
Islands of Twinsight, and it's the second one. You can get that one for free.
Yeah, Islands of Twinsight.
I also think, like, the game I recommend to people who don't play puzzle games is always A Monster's Expedition.
Yeah.
To be fair, I had a pretty easy time with that game, except for a few late-game puzzles and a lot of, like, the secret stuff. So I don't really know, like, if a newbie would have a super hard time with the game. I would really be interested to see if that's the case, because I do keep recommending it to people under the pretense that it is a bit easier to get into as far as Sokobons go. Especially Archipelago Sokobons about traversing an archipelago using objects that you move that both solve puzzles and act as platforms. Which is an entire subgenre. I have one last game I want to talk about.
Yeah.
Which is Jaws. The Stern Jaws pinball table is so good. I have been fiending for it so bad. I get, like, the shakes when I'm out of... I have withdrawal.
With jowls.
Like, look, Jaws don't eat the ball. That's fine. It's just a really fun table with really good shots. It's the first Keith Elwin that doesn't have a shot I actively despise and makes me want to rip my hair out. Like, Avengers, neat game, has some good shots. So many shots in Avengers are, like, it's like the Dark Souls of pinball. No, it's not. That's the Black Knight sort of rage is Dark Souls of pinball. Jurassic Park is really good. But I swear to God, the tower shot is so bad. As far as side ramps go, it's so bad. But Jaws is just great, cool, very, very deep, has a lot of things to consider. Fun multi-balls, good game, cool stuff. Don't want to talk about it too much. I also got a chance to play the new Elton John table from Jersey Jack. And it is the simplest Jersey Jack table, which is not a bad thing. It is... Like, it plays like a table from the 90s. They finally have learned how to display all the relevant info on the table itself.
Oh, good.
Jersey Jack has this problem where they were the first American company to start using, like, video displays instead of dot matrices. And they took that and were like, well, let's just put everything on the video display then. So, like, Wizard of Oz has very little actual important info on the table. Most of, like, keeping track of things is on the TV monitor display, and every game they've released, it's gotten more and more stuff on the table, until, like, Godfather, where they just don't explain anything on the table, but they also don't explain it on the monitor either, so you have to figure out what the fuck the newspaper icon means.
The year is 2077. All pinball is just a screen that you stick, put a quarter into, and then look at 15 minutes of pinball footage.
I think he just described, video slots.
Oh no!
Or, like, video pachinko. Yeah,
video poker. Well, you know, this is the Blotcher episode, so that makes sense.
Yeah, but Jaws is great. Elton John, very simple. Keeps track of everything. The best song to play IMO is I'm Still Standing. Song choice matters a little bit. Not a lot,
Just a little bit.
Just a little.
It does matter, but only a little bit. I'm still messing around to see if there's a better one, but I think I'm still standing as just the most consistent. A little pro tip. Pro tip for Jaws, by the way, is you want to start a bounty hunt before you go into the Jaws multi-ball. Mako Shark is the easiest, and so if you want to get the bounty hunt multi-ball, it's the easiest. Tiger Shark is the like most useful in terms of just like trying to go for completion. And I think Thresher is the one that gives 2x multiplier in your next Jaws multi-ball, but that's probably the best for score. And then the last two are just whatever. But Mako Shark's the easiest by far. So if you're in like a tournament and you get the bounty hunt, go for Mako Shark.
I have this book from the NES period that was like how to win at Nintendo games.
And influence people.
And it was all written by one guy. And I would love if we lived in a period where, you know, that was walkthroughs was one guy writing a book. Because I would love to see the citation for like, you know, noted pinball expert Matthew Marissa notes that if you're looking to make progress, the Mako Shark is the best one to pick on the Jaws table.
However, no, that's not what I said. I just said that's the easiest to get the multi-ball.
Well, yes, but this theoretical character is editorializing the words, okay. You see. They're an unreliable narrator. this is a bit how, with an unreliable
how high
narrator.
Concept.
Also, I didn't kill my wife.
Jesus Christ. Okay, I'm gonna have to cut your mic there because I feel like we're getting too topical now.
Oh no. Oh no, you're right. I didn't even realize.
So on that note, thanks for checking out NetSurfer Pro's Talk Surfer Show. You can find us on any podcasting platform, you know, Spotify, iTunes, what have you. Give us a like, give us a rating, give us a review. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know what topics you'd want us to cover next or what you think we might be interested in if you just have a cool, interesting subject. You can find us on Twitter and Blue Sky at NetSurfer Pro, where you can send us messages and get updates for our upcoming episodes, such as teasers in the form of little emoji riddles.
Ooh.
And try to decipher the clues and follow them to the solution that is an upcoming episode. You can be so smart, you can know it before everyone else does, and you can brag about that like a fucking hipster.
Yep, and if you put all of the emojis together, you can triangulate across the United States, and you can find the true location of the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah. So you can also find me on Twitter and Blue Sky at Twackaroo on Twitter and at Twack on Blue Sky .social, where I post what I've been up to, projects I've been working on. I haven't been doing as much pinball posting because I'm on Pinsider now under Twackaroo. Or not Pinsider, Pindigo under Twackaroo. But I do sometimes still do pinball posting where I post good scores on Blue Sky and Twitter.
Nice.
And you can also follow me on Twitch at twitch.tv/twack where I stream.
As for myself, you can find me on TikTok and on Twitter and on Blue Sky at Galen Wilson. That's at GalenWLS0N, append.bluesky.social for the Blue Sky code, of course. You can find my hot takes, things that I have been thinking about, some banger tweets, honestly. I've had some pretty good jokes recently. Actually, check out my TikTok. I've had one that's been blowing up, got like 5,000 views. It's like the most views anyone's ever gotten. You can also find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube, and you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/machinegunvampire. I actually have a new series in the work, just the singular work, but hopefully it'll be works soon.
It'll be works the waits.
But yeah, for right now, I have been Galen, your host this week of Talk Surfer Show.
And I've been Matthew Marissa, your co-host of Talk Surfer Show.
And, you know, I guess we're going to have to fold this bit. Going to have to take the money and run. Going to have to...
You're really going all in on this, aren't you?
Hey!
We'll be here all week. Yeah.
Yeah. Boop, 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 bo